Let's do that hockey.
Welcome to Dauber Prospects Report, a member of the Hockey Podcast Network. This is report number 53. I'm Victor Nuno, one of the co-hosts here, and with me is Peter Harling. How are you doing, Pete?
El Nuno. I'm good as always, bud. I'm good as always. Good time of year. We got NCAAs all wrapped up. We got round two of CHL playoffs. We got the NHL playoffs on the horizon. I missed you last week on the conversation with Shane. That was a great episode, but it's an exciting time of year, dude. We got players signing as free agents from college in Europe, which you know is my bag. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good. I've just come off a crazy couple weeks. That's why I wasn't able to join you. Family trips, work. It's been crazy, but it's been good. I loved your conversation with Shane. He's such a connected, in tune guy. That was great, but it's good to be back in the saddle with you. And yeah, fun times as we approach the NHL playoffs and all those other good things. And today, we're going to talk about one of those great things, and that is the Frozen Four that just finished up. There were some really, really great performances, and I know we've talked about some of the college players a bit, but it's time to talk about some of them that have stood out to us, yeah?
Yeah, I'm excited to have this conversation.
Before we do that, we should mention this episode is brought to you by the Hockey Podcast Network and DraftKings. Follow at HockeyPodNet for more great hockey podcasts. You can use the DraftKings promo code THPN for listening to the show. More on that in a bit. We're also proudly sponsored by Fantrax, the ultimate league manager for any dynasty sport you play. Completely customizable for however you want to set up your league, from scoring categories, an amazing draft room to host a draft, draft pick trading, treasury option, and so much more. Use our promo code to sign up for a free league using the link fantrax.com/DPR show. So, Pete, we had some pretty great performances, and we're just going to kind of go back and forth and talk about some of the guys that stood out to us the most. And I did also want to mention that we did our brackets, you know, on the show, and I was pretty close. I missed only two out of all of the games. I missed Cornell beat Maine. I picked Maine, and I picked BC to beat Denver in the national championship. It's not bad to only miss two games in the entire bracket. The rest were all correct.
That's some solid prognostication there, Nostradamus. Well done.
Yep. So, I mean, we'll some of them were maybe people would say not bold choices because mostly some of them were the favorites, but there were some maybe upsets there. I had a feeling Denver was going to go all the way or at least all the way to the final because they're such a deep, well-coached team, but we're going to talk about some of those guys. But first, I want to start with Will Smith, and he is one of my guys that I want to mention and highlight. As John Butchergrass said on the broadcast, when the lights shine brightest, Will Smith comes up big, and he definitely did. Maybe not so much in the final game because no one from BC scored in the final against Denver, but he had a pretty epic game against Michigan. You know, I was watching that game really closely. I think we both were. And Michigan was holding their own against BC. It was a really close game until Will Smith kind of took over and broke it open. So they won 4-0, but it was way closer than that. And he definitely had some big points in the win against Quinnipiac and Michigan Tech. And so there was definitely some strong performances there. He seems to thrive in big pressure moments. I don't think it phases him. It kind of seems to bring out the best in him. So I really like what I've seen from Will Smith. It sure sounds like he's come, you know, a long way. We were wondering how he would do this year in college, and he just absolutely destroyed 71 points in 41 games. I mean, it's pretty ridiculous what he was able to accomplish there. Of course, he did well with the USA at the World Juniors. And, you know, kind of looking at some of his underlying metrics, he still looks like, you know, he could be a star producer for the Sharks. One of the things that I find interesting still is how his defensive game still leads some to be desired, which makes me think of, like, could he be like a top line center who's maybe not as good defensively? That always makes me think of Mark Scheifele. I don't know why, Pete, but that's the comp that I like for Will Smith, because Scheifele is a great offensive producer, but he certainly is not going to win any Selke awards. And, you know, in the right situation, he can be fine. He can drive play. And I think Will Smith can be like that. But there are definitely some holes in his game still, I would say. Looking at some of his at our Fantasy Hockey Life player card, you can see that his shots and goals and assists for what he did in the NCAA were pretty top notch, but he does not hit or block pretty much at all. So in terms of peripheral coverage, that's what you can expect from Will Smith. Looking at his PNHLE, Will Smith has, he's basically was like over 100 last year and he's still there this year. So there's some interesting comps, guys like Elias Pettersson. I'm not sure that he's quite that level. The other comps in that model are like Jonathan Drouin and Dylan Strome. So yeah, I think he's better than those two. So maybe somewhere between like a Strome and a Pettersson. I don't know. I just saw some word today that Ryan Leonard is going back to BC for his sophomore season. And I have a strong feeling that Smith is not going to go pro or pro without the other, without Leonard. So I kind of feel like they're all going to come back, but I don't think we've heard that yet. Maybe by the time this comes out, we'll have heard. But I kind of feel like at this point, with Leonard saying he's coming back, they're all going to come back for their sophomore season. We'll have to see about that. They're too young to go to the AHL, though. So that's potentially a determining factor. So, and I don't think any of them, except for Leonard, are really ready for the NHL. So that's interesting. And the last thing I want to leave you with, Pete, is that the all-tournament team for this Frozen Four, it was all Denver Pioneers. Makes sense. They won the national title. They were the best team. They probably had the best players, right? Well, the only one who wasn't a Denver Pioneer was Will Smith. So the only guy that wasn't the all-tournament team that wasn't part of the Denver Pioneers was Will Smith. I think that must mean something, right? What do you think? What do you think of Will Smith?
Well, he's a very exciting player to watch. And, you know, you love the players that shine the brightest when the spotlight is on them and the stakes are the highest. And he's, you know, he's early in his career, but he's certainly, like you said, starting to show a penchant for that. I'm not sure I have, significant concerns about his defensive game. Like, he's not the best two-way forward. There's no question about that. But I wouldn't say it's a glaring liability. You know, I don't get to watch a lot of Boston College games in Canada. So, you know, I only saw him in the Beanpot and in this tournament this season, but you know, it's hard to be very good defensively when the puck's always on your stick, which is a good problem for him to have. Yeah, and you're right about the trio has played together for the formative years of their career here with the national team and now at Boston College and internationally with USA, the three of them. So with Leonard going back, it'd be interesting if any one of them does move forward. Of the three, I would say Leonard would be the most probable candidate to play in the NHL. And there's a long time between now and October when the season renews. So anything could happen between now and then, but it does sound from this point that Leonard's going back, which may or may not have any impact on Will Smith's desire to turn pro and what the Sharks want to do with him. But considering San Jose is not really in a situation where they're like, we need to win right now and we need you, there's no rush to bring him along. And I think Mike Greer seems like he's pretty patient with his prospects and development. So I would be, if I had to bet on which way Will Smith's going to go, it would be back to Boston. Definitely an exciting player though, right?
Oh yeah, real exciting. And you're right about the offense and puck on his stick, but you know, there's still a lot of times like we talked about with Shane, how much of the game is played without the puck on your stick, like over 90% of it. And that's right. The part that concerns me a little bit, because he spends a lot of time without the puck on his stick and sometimes seems a little lost.
Yeah. Well, you also mentioned that the Pioneers own the all-tournament roster, including their goalie, Matt Davis. And he's someone that I want to talk about because before this weekend, I'd never heard of Matt Davis before. Didn't know who the Denver goalie was, but I sure do now. He looked fantastic. And, you know, you have to get a shutout against Boston College. And in a game where the stakes were, you know, couldn't be any higher. So who is Matt Davis, this goalie that won the championship for Denver? I wouldn't say single-handedly, but he played a significant role in their win. He is a 22-year-old free agent. Never been drafted, and he's from Calgary. He is 6'1", so on the short side for NHL goalies, I would say, but not too short. He is in his junior year at college. So that's his third season. He played the last 2 years with the Pioneers as well. So this will be his second championship, but only his first as the starting goalie. He was playing behind Sharks prospect Magnus Corona for the first 2 years he was there. But he's the starting goalie now for sure. And he missed a little bit of time early this season as well due to injury, but he still managed to post a regular season record of 22-5-3. Not too shabby. And yeah, of course, Denver is a very good team, so it's easy to post impressive stats when you're playing goal for a team that's really good and plays a stifling defensive game, which they did. But he made some huge saves, especially one on, was it Ryan Leonard, where he dove across and mm-hmm. got an arm on it, and Leonard was like already celebrating because he had an empty yawning cage, and he didn't miss on his shot. He didn't flutter it or anything like that, and Davis made a save he had no business making, which was like, oh my god. But besides the tremendous saves that he made, some other aspects of his game that really stood out to me, Victor, were his puck handling abilities. Like, really good. He was a factor in the game because Boston College would dump the puck in and he would corral it and make it available, move it up the ice to his defenseman and really make some quick transition that made it difficult for Boston to get some line changes in at some cases, because, you know, they dumped the puck in to get a line change and before they knew it, he was shooting it right back out. They wouldn't want to give up any sort of odd man rush or breakaway opportunity. He made some really nice stretch passes, and he did set up some breakaways. I can't remember who he set up for basically a breakaway, but he did it a couple times, in fact, in the tournament. So he's someone who I think could be a really viable free agent target either this summer or maybe next, right? He's only 22, so if he goes back for his senior year at Denver and plays outstanding again and really, you know, dominates the league, he could really play his way into an NHL contract or a pro contract at least. I tried to sign him in one of my dynasty leagues. I'm watching this game, Victor, and I'm like, oh my god, this guy's fantastic. So I look him up on Fantrax. He's not even listed on Fantrax. So I, you know, I'm trying to give the listeners the Fantrax rostership percentages for all the players we talk about today. Is a zero. He doesn't exist on Fantrax. But that doesn't mean I can't sign him in one of my fantasy leagues, even though he's not been drafted. Because he's 22 years old, he's eligible. So I checked the boards on my league, and you know, no one has signed him. He's not rostered. So the only form I had to check was this month's free agent signing list, and he wasn't there. So I start writing a thread. My team signs Matt Davis, NCAA. I do a copy and paste of his Elite Prospects link and say, please add him to Fantrax, and I post it. And my page refreshes, and someone else signed him 25 seconds before me. I missed out on him by 25 seconds.
Well, I think you're going to, maybe I'll make you feel better with what I have to say.
All right.
I think he's just on a really good team. That's what I think. And I mean, amazing performance, like you said. That save on Leonard was like all-time great any league. It was, if you haven't seen it, go watch a clip of it on Twitter. It was
bananas.
Insane. I think
bananas.
I think it was Perreault that passed him the puck across the crease. So he respected the shot. He went cross crease, and he's a lefty, catches with the right. So he went cross crease, respected the shot. And then, like you said, Leonard got all of it. He did not miss on that shot. He got it up, but it hit the, not the glove, not the like webbing part of the glove, but it hit like the wrist arm part of the glove.
Forearm, yeah.
Still great, but like he anticipated that. He got over, maybe a bit lucky, because a few inches either direction and that's a goal for sure. But I'm not going to call it luck. He made the save. But he was a goalie, I think, who just had an amazing game. You know, you look at, one of the things that I always like to look at is the in-stat goal save above expected. Now, Matt Davis, last couple of years, was well below that. And this year, he's well above it. So, you know, what does that mean exactly? I don't know, but perhaps it's more the team than it is hit, is all I'm saying. So I'm not going to take anything away from him. But I don't think he's like the next Devon Levi or anything like that. I think he probably deserves an NHL look, and he probably deserves, you know, a tryout, and maybe he'll earn a spot and that'll be great. But I don't think he's going to be like a next star. He could be a competent, you know, backup or something like that.
Right. I'm not heartbroken that I missed out on him. It's the manner in which I missed out on him by 25 seconds that really rubbed me the wrong way. More than not. Like, if I would have checked the form and saw that someone signed him 2 days ago, I'd have been like, yeah, fair enough.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not upset at all. But because I missed out by like 25 seconds, I was like, oh, come on.
No, I totally get that.
Yeah.
But in case you're all running out to grab Matt Davis, I personally would not. Anything else on Davis?
No, let's talk about another goalie, though. Your guy's up.
Yeah, but kudos for him and kudos on winning a national title. That's incredible. And frankly, I think that was everyone said that was the weak spot for Denver was their goaltending. And, well, he proved them wrong. So good job, buddy. The next guy I want to talk about is Jacob Fowler. And he is a goalie that I would run out and grab if you can. I doubt it, but somehow he's available. He was really good. He was Boston College's goalie, in case you didn't know that. He's 6'2", 215 pounds, 2023 third round pick. He was super close to the trifecta, Pete. I don't know how I didn't have a way to look this up, but I wonder how often a player has won the USHL title, World Junior Championship title, and NCAA title within one calendar year. I can't imagine that's happened very often. And Jacob Fowler came really close. If Boston College had won, he would have done that. He won last year the Youngstown Phantoms, USHL. He was incredible. He was the difference for them in that playoff. He was not, I would say, the difference for the Americans in their world championship, but he did play a couple games and, you know, he helped. He won all three games. Not a great save percentage, but he was there and he was part of the team. And anyways, then this postseason, he was really good. His expected goals per goal conceded was 1.41. That's a really high goal save above expected. And he was just great. I mean, watching him play, he was calm. He tracked the puck super well. He never seemed surprised for the most part by where the shot was coming from. He handled the rebounds well. And he was very athletic and reactionary when he needed to be. I didn't think he was exceptionally good in that championship game. One of those short side goals was really not great. But he did have more expected goals than he gave up. And really, BC, who was averaging, I think, close to 4 goals a game, should have been able to put a couple past Matt Davis. So I wouldn't say it was entirely on him, but unfortunate that that was his legacy. Looking at hockey prospecting for Jacob Fowler, he's looking like a couple of decent NHLers. Charlie Lindgren, who's just playing out of his mind right now for Washington, he looks a bit like him. Both American goalies, both kind of that, you know, 6'1", 6'2". Fowler's a bigger dude, though. He's much thicker. There's some other comps there, like, well, guys that haven't quite matured yet, like Drew Comesso. So it'll be interesting to see where Fowler ends up. I'm pretty high on him myself. I have him ranked fairly high in terms of my personal ranks. So I have him 8th on my Fantasy Hockey Life ranks. And what's interesting is that there are 6 goalies taken in 2023, Pete. I didn't prep you on this, but I'm going to ask you a question. Can you name any of the goalies who were taken ahead of Jacob Fowler in 2023?
Adam Guyon.
Mm-hmm.
There's 3 of them. He was 4th goalie, I think.
He was 6th.
6th?
Yeah.
Carson Bjarnason
was the first. You're right. Yeah, Bjarnason.
That was another one.
Yeah.
There's another Euro goalie that's playing in the USHL right now.
Yeah, Hrabal.
Yeah, that's his name, right?
There was his American, 3. His American teammate who won gold, who started ahead of him.
3 or 4 off the top of my head. I can't remember the 4th without wasting too much listener time.
So Trey Augustine was taken.
Trey Augustine, yeah, of course.
Yep, and then probably the one most people aren't going to think about is Damian Clara, who went to the Ducks. He's Italian, so that's fun. But anyways, my point is that he was taken 6th, and I don't know. You'd be hard-pressed to find someone arguing with you that he's not currently the best of that 2023 crop. So long ways to go. We'll see how it shakes out. But I think that the Canadians found themselves their future starter. And he looks like he could be a real stud. So I think Jacob Fowler is great. I, you know, usually we don't like to make the advice of go get someone who just had a great season. But if the price isn't too high, I'd be down for acquiring Jacob Fowler, because I think that he really shows that he's calm in big moments. He's got that winning pedigree. And I don't think the Canadians have like a clear for sure this guy's pegged to be the number one forever and ever. So I think Fowler has just a claim to it as anyone else, and he seems great.
Yeah, it seemed like Caden Primo was going to be that guy. And, you know, he's getting NHL reps lately, but, you know, his stock is certainly not plummeted, but it's dipped hard. Jacob Dobes is there as well. Not 100% sold on him either. You know, growing up a fan of the Toronto Maple Leafs, I have this ingrained disdain for the Montreal Canadiens and all things and all players Montreal Canadiens. But now that I'm kind of moving towards the media side, I really try to be more less biased. It's difficult, but it's something that's making it easier for me to embrace the Montreal Canadiens is the quality of the prospects that they currently have in their organization. I absolutely love Lane Hudson and Arber Jacki for starters. I'm also Cole Caulfield. He's not a prospect anymore. He's the real deal. There's a lot to like going on in Montreal land these days, isn't there?
Oh, there certainly is. And I believe it's Jacob Dobesh, by the way, because he's Czech.
Oh,
but
sure.
That guy is pretty good. And you're right, they have some options in goal, but you're right about the prospects. They just seem to be hitting one after another out of the park. And it was super fun to see Lane Hudson in the NHL doing Lane Hudson things, both good and bad. He was exposed for a couple of goals, and
he
broke some ankles and scored some points. And it was the full Lane Hudson experience, which I appreciated.
Yeah, it was a pretty awesome debut. He looked great walking the line there and carrying the puck in. He got a little lucky picking up the point. He just put the puck on net, but that's what you do. Put pucks on goal, good things can happen. And they did. All right, so moving on from goalies, let's talk about some skaters. And the first guy I want to talk about is, I'm going to Michigan. And I'm going to talk about Frank Nazar, 27%. Rostered on Fantrax. I'm sure that number is going to start climbing. He was drafted by the Chicago Blackhawks in the 22 draft, 13th overall. And he missed a lot of time in his draft plus 1 year. He only played the final 13 games in his college year, D plus one with Michigan. So, you know, having missed so much time, I think he became kind of an afterthought. You know what I mean? Like, he was a little bit forgotten about. He still managed 7 points in those 13 games coming in at the end of the year when everyone's in full stride and playing at a high pace. And, you know, he's coming in at the end of the season with no training camp and everyone's just way ahead of him timing wise, conditioning wise, and he still played well. This year, you know, all things being equal, he went in healthy. He had a training camp with them and he popped for 17 goals and 41 points. And had 8 assists for USA at the World Junior Championship as well, helping them win the gold medal. You look at his hockey prospecting chart, and it has him trending down. He's falling from a 19% to a 3% star probability from his draft year to now, and 62 to 50% probability for NHL. But context is key here, right? Like, those numbers make sense, because if you look at his stats, you know, he had a huge decline. Well, that's because he was injured and he missed a tremendous amount of time. So missing that development time, however, can also be devastating. But I think Nazar is going to be just fine, quite frankly. The Dauber Prospects organizational rankings that are trickling out right now, and we'll be talking about those in the summer. He received an overall grade across the board, an average of 8.0, which is really high. And his PNHLE is also trending back up after it fell from 75 in his draft year to 31 last year. But now it's creeping its way back up. It's up to 53 again, which currently projects him as a second line player, right? In this tournament, he didn't play on the weekend, but he played last Thursday and he scored the goal that was like the goal or set up the goal. That was the goal of the tournament, I should say. That pass, I don't know if you saw it, Victor. I'm pretty sure you were tweeting about it the same as I was. But it was like a 2-on-1, and the defenseman took the pass away, as you do. And the goalie really didn't give him much to shoot at. So, you know, he was left-handed, so he was kind of on his forehand. He didn't really have an angle to pass. So what he did was he did the between-the-legs backhand pass behind the defenseman to a wide-open, I think it was Gavin Brindley, who cashed that yawning cage goal in. It was just a beautiful pass. I mean, this is a silky smooth mitts player. Great vision, great hands, great panache to do a play like that and that setting on that stage. You know, kudos to him. He just signed his entry-level contract with Chicago, in fact, so he's turned pro now. And he made his NHL debut and scored his first NHL goal on his first shot, a la Mary Lemieux, but I don't think it was his first shift. That's pretty neat. However, you know, so you might be getting really excited about that. Oh, wow, he turned pro. He scored a goal in his first game. He's going to make it. He's going to be great. Well, pump the brakes. He's played two games now. And then the second game, he had one shot, didn't score any points, and was a -3 in a 3-1 loss. So maybe not quite ready for prime time yet. The Chicago doesn't really have anything to play for. So they'll give him another game if they have one. Get a good look at him, give him some ice. But I suspect he will see the lion's share of his ice time next season in the American Hockey League, right? Overall, Victor, I see Nazar as a really great second-line player or a poor first-line player on a bad team. But good news for him, he's got Connor Bedard in the first-line center kind of locked down, I think. I don't suspect we're going to see Nazar challenged for that. So that settles him quite nicely as the second line center in the future for Chicago. I like the comps that we see for him on the hockey prospecting chart. You got guys like Kyle Connor, Logan Couture, or Sean Couturier as his upside and potential. I think those are pretty realistic comparisons for him, Victor. I'm really high on this guy, not just because I have him rostered on my league in the Dobber Prospects League, but I think I'd like to get more stock on him and help raise his 27% Fantrax rostership up. What's your take on Frank Nazar?
Well, I agree with you. He seems great. I just want to correct one thing. He is right-handed, not left-handed. So if you watch that play, that play was ridiculous. If you haven't seen it, go watch it. I had to slow it down to like 20% speed, like less, I think it was 0.25 speed, because everything he did in that at full speed was insane. Like you said, the defenseman put the stick in the perfect spot, denied or thought he denied the pass. And Nazar, in a split second, recognized that, pulled the puck back. There wasn't really a good shooting angle, as you said. He pulled it all the way back and in one motion passed it between his legs perfectly to Gavin Brindley for a one-time. I mean, everything happens so fast, you can't even really appreciate it unless you slow it down, and then you realize that he did this all in a split second. It was insane. So yeah, that assist was ridiculous. I must have watched it like 50 times because it was breaking my brain how he did that so quickly and effortlessly and perfectly. The timing of everything was just perfect. Like, it was ridiculous.
And that's what separates good players from great players, right? Because you don't have time to think about that. That's not something that you plan, right? You're not skating down the ice thinking, okay, I'm going to do a between the legs backhand pass to Brindley for the empty netter. Like, it just happens organically. And to be able to do that in the combination of the hockey sense, the skill, the cojones to do it, the ability to identify passing and shooting lanes. That's what hockey sense, one of the things that hockey sense is, as far as I'm concerned. So that was a really strong example of that.
Agreed. Just ridiculous. Yeah, I do wonder how he's going to translate to the pros. Like you said, Chicago has nothing to play for. So it's hard to evaluate exactly how things are going. But the fact that he scored on that first shot, I mean, he clearly can score on professional goalies. you know, what's going to be around him is going to be a big part of the question. I mean, obviously they have Bedard, but they don't have too much else in the forward ranks. They'll get another top pick this year. But yeah, I mean, I think Nazar can certainly be a really high impact offensive
forward. Producer Evan is saying in the chat that he does that all the time in Beer League.
I want video evidence of that.
Yeah, I'm going to need to see it too, Evan. We know hockey games move fast, but with DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NHL, you can score faster than anything happening on the ice. This week, new customers can bet $5 and get $200 instantly in bonus bets. Download DraftKings Sportsbook app with the code THPN. New customers bet just $5 on the NHL and get $200 instantly in bonus bets. Only on DraftKings Sportsbook with the code THPN. The crown is yours.
So yeah, let's move on to the next player. I agree. I'm really high on Nazar. We all were on our org ranks. The next guy, we'll maybe bring the tone down a little bit. Ryan Green is the next guy I want to talk about. And he's certainly not your super high end, you know, blue chip prospect. He plays for Boston University. So he's been there for a couple years. And when Macklin came, which we're going to talk about later, Celebrini, Ryan Green ended up being the, you know, de facto second line center because Celebrini was so good. But he's a really strong player. He's 20 years old. He's got a really late birthday, or really early birthday. I don't know. He's October 21st. So that makes him really old for his draft class. 6'1", 174 pound right shot center. He was Chicago's second round pick, 2022. So definitely, I think the way things are shaping up in Chicago, more of a depth center. But he had a really strong NCAA season, 36 points in 40 games for a strong BU team. His hockey prospecting has kind of trended down a little bit since his USHL days when he was drafted. He was drafted out of the Green Bay Gambler system, then had a really strong first season at BU, and then this one was even better. But he's kind of trending more like a Charlie Coyle type. I think that's a really appropriate comp for him. And Coyle certainly has some relevance at times. He's not like a, you know, top of your lineup kind of guy, but in a deep league can be interesting. But Green in the PNHL model is trending up to like a 50 point player. I think that's pretty accurate of what he could be. He's just a strong, you know, two-way guy that I think in the right system, you know, could be with the right wingers, could be pretty relevant. And what I like about Ryan Green is that he is available for you if you want. He's not someone who's highly rostered. So I like that. I don't think the upside is anywhere near, obviously, Bedard or Nazar, but I think Green could be a good depth pivot, maybe a third line center, or maybe he ends up being the second line center with guys like Nazar and some of the other forwards in their roster. So that's my thoughts on Ryan Green. Not super exciting, but I just wanted to mention that I think he's actually a lot stronger than maybe some people would think. And I think he has a really good shot of being an NHLer and being someone who, depending on how this Chicago Blackhawks team shapes up over the next few years, could be part of a really strong forward core. What do you think, Pete?
Well, I'm part of the 4% that rosters him on Fantrax, and not just because he's a Boston Terrier. I have a soft spot for. But yeah, I like the Charlie Coyle comparison. I like the Ryan Hartman comparison. And, you know, the leagues that I'm all in have banger stats. And if you look at I'm looking at his Fantasy Hockey Life card, and his bash isn't great, but it adds another layer to his value. So he's a player who I like, and I think he's got NHL upside. I think he could play in the NHL for several seasons. I don't think he'll ever be a star top line player, but that just means that he'll be good value. I don't think he'll be making $8 million a year. So for cap leagues, you have someone who can play regularly, not eat up too much of your cap, provide secondary offense, and give you a nice little bit of a balance with stats in multiple categories as well, especially if he has center and wing eligibility, where you can get some faceoff wins from the right or the left side as well. That would give him an extra little boost. So yeah, you know, someone I've got time for, but it's not a must own, but nice. He's a nice player. All right. So my next guy, we made our choices a few days ago, and a couple of these guys have since signed, which is just really fortuitous. I'm talking about Massimo Rizzo, Denver University. He's 5% rostered on Fantrax. And he was a 2019 seventh round pick by the Philadelphia Flyers. And he signed today, as a matter of fact, as we're recording this on April 17th. His contract will not kick in until next season. However, he could sign a tryout for, kind of, Philadelphia's got any games left, Victor. He might do that, or he might do an AHL tryout and play in the, if Lehigh Valley, I don't even know if Lehigh Valley's in the Calder Cup playoffs or not. Oh, hopefully they are. Yeah? There you go. Giddy up. Well, hopefully I'm sure we'll see him then. So we talked about Massimo Rizzo when James was on the show with us several episodes ago. And he was kind of cool on him, even though he's a Flyers guy. So my takeaway with Rizzo is there's the good and the bad. And the good with Rizzo is he's an extremely productive and consistent offensive producer. Three seasons in college hockey, his career stat line is 126 points in 107 games, which is 1.18 points per game. He made the NCHC All-Rookie Team as a freshman, the first All-Star team as a sophomore, and he's a Hobey Baker nominee as a junior this season, and he's got two national championships now. That's a pretty good resume, last time I checked. The bad, he's 5'11", 174, and his skating is not elite. It's not atrocious, but it ain't great. He missed some time due to injury this season at the end of the year there, but he was able to come back and play in the tournament. He started on the fourth line, worked his way back in by the time the first game finished, playing in his regular spot on the first line with Tristan Braz and Jack Devine, a couple of solid prospects there. And, you know, I saw him in the two games. He made a number of really good offensive plays, but he was a little rusty, which is, I think, understandable, right? He made some plays, but I'm not sure he had, he might have had an assist. I can't remember if he had any points or not. So looking forward, I can see him, you know, playing next year pro hockey, but I'm a little bit cautious about his NHL upside. And he probably is going to start in the American Hockey League, like I was saying. He'll be 23 years old when the upcoming season starts, the 24-25 season. So, you know, 23 years old it's not old for an NHL career, but it's a little bit old to be breaking out as a prospect. Like, he's got to hit quick. He's got to have an immediate impact and either make the Flyers right away or play a season in the American Hockey League and be a star on Lehigh and be a point-a-game sort of player. You know what I'm saying? He's got to hit the ground running in the American Hockey League for me to have confidence in his game as an NHL upside player. Given his size and his skating, he has to be in the top six or he's not going to be in the NHL. But, you know, we take a look at his hockey prospecting chart and, you know, his star probabilities are zero. His NHL probabilities are 41%. So, you know, less than 50. He's got comps that are underwhelming as well. The best one, I think, is Alexander Kerfoot. So James is a little cool on him, Victor. I'm guessing you are too, because he's a seventh round pick, so he doesn't have the draft pedigree that's going to give him a world of opportunities. And like I said, he's already going to be 23 years old. So what's your appetite for fantasy Massimo Rizzo?
Yeah, I'm pretty cool on him too. I mean, he was drafted out of the BCHL where he won a title and for Penticton or maybe it was Coquitlam. And then he went to Denver and yeah, he's been great at Denver, but as an older player and on a really strong team, I think this is one of those things that's hard to evaluate on a really good team. How much is he contributing? And I think he's a good to great college hockey player. There's no question about that, but how good of a pro is he going to be? I just don't know. I don't think that he's going to be a huge producer. Maybe he could be a 40 or 50 point guy. That's kind of what I'm thinking, which, you know, isn't bad if you want a depth guy, but I don't think he's going to be like a big time scorer in the professional ranks. And yeah, his equivalencies are pretty low. And just like watching him too, like he can be very opportunistic but he doesn't necessarily always drive the bus. And in those last two games, I mean, he was injured for a large part of the end of the season. He came back for the semifinal and final, didn't have any points. So it's not fair to judge him on those last two games because he was just coming back from injury, and those are pretty high intensity games. So I'm not going to say anything about him at that point, but he was awesome for Denver, and obviously and often one of the best players. He and Jack Devine were pretty great, but I think both those guys have muted offensive upside in the NHL personally.
Yeah, we've seen college players that are prolific scorers not really transition to the National Hockey League. Ben Myers, Jordan Kawaguchi, and Dean, I forget his first name. Anyhow, I wouldn't be surprised if Rizzo turned into be another one of those players. I saw on Twitter today, where I saw that he'd signed was Russ Cohen posted it. So I asked Russ, do you think he's an NHL player? And Russ thinks he is. So that's good enough for me. Although I did trade him in fantasy hockey not too long ago. But if the opportunity arose to reacquire him, I would strongly consider it depending on the cost.
NHL player, yes, but I wonder what he thinks the upside is. I can't imagine he's thinking he's going to be a 70-point guy or anything like that.
Yeah, that's fair. But, you know, given his style of play, I think it's top six or nothing.
Yeah, maybe a middle six depth scorer. I mean, if he could put 40-ish points, that can be valuable to a team, but not so much to your fantasy roster. All right, let's move on. We have a few guys to get to, Pete, and we're running a little long here. But Ziv Buyum is the next guy I want to talk about. What a guy. This guy, Ziv Buyum, has impressed me all season. He's draft eligible, KHL forgot. And he, you know, people talk about great freshman seasons for NCAA defenders. This season was special for Ziv Buyum. 42 games, 50 points, 39 assists. He was amazing. So compare that to Lane Hutson, Adam Fox, Brian Leetch, Luke Hughes, Zach Werenski, some of the best ever. And Ziv Buyum has more points in an NCAA season than all of them. Not points per game, but total points. If you look at points per game, he's eighth all time. That's ridiculous. And if you remember, guys like Makar and Quinn Hughes, they were older than 18 when they were freshmen. So they were a bit older when they finally had that big breakout. So he dwarfed Quinn Hughes' rookie season in the NCAA. Currently, he's consolidated at number 9. I think he'll go in the top 10. I would be shocked if Ziv Buyum fell out of the top 10 this season. It only takes one team. So, you know, we'll see. The other thing I think is interesting, you know, David Carl coached the Americans at the World Juniors. He's the coach of Denver. He has all these great players. Obviously, they just won the national title. He only took one player with him to the to the World Championships, and that was Ziv Buyum. It wasn't his older brother, Shai Buyum. It wasn't Sean Behrens, who we'll talk about later. It wasn't any of the other forwards. It was only Ziv. That's really impressive. We talked previously about how impressive Ziv was at the World Junior Championships. He's just a really solid player. I mean, you watch him and like, he doesn't always do the most flashy things, but he does not make mistakes. And his offensive game, while not super dynamic, he is very slick and he pretty much always makes the right play. He's not like the most physical guy, but he will separate players from the puck. So he, you know, does hit a little bit. I just think the sky's the limit for this guy. I think he could be a superstar producer. In fact, in the hockey prospect team model, he looks like Evan Bouchard, superstar producer in the NHL. And I think Ziv Buyum could be that. There's some other comps that aren't as flattering, like Ty Smith, Cam York, Yusuf Alamaki. So, you know, it's possible he ends up just as a serviceable defenseman that doesn't score a ton. But I think what he's done at such a young age, I mean, he's 18. He turned 18 in December 7th. So he's not like Macklin Celebrini young. But Ziv Buyum, for what he did in college, was ridiculous. His bash is actually decent in terms of his hits. He doesn't shoot a ton, and his blocks are actually kind of low. But that's, I think, because he's so good positionally, and he drives the play the other way. So he may be more of a points-only guy. We'll have to see how he was on a team that wasn't so dominant as Denver, because I think they're there could be an opportunity for some more blocks, but Denver just outshot everybody most of the time, so there wasn't as much opportunity. It's hilarious looking at Ziv Bouyim's PNHLE chart because it looks like a Mount Everest slope. I mean, the thing's so steep. He went from 21 PNHLE 2 years ago to 120 PNHLE this season. That's how high he is. Guy's a stud. Ziv Bouyim, I mean, we'll talk, I'm sure, more about draft-eligible defensemen later, but I think this guy has the ability to be special. He's already showing what he can do at this level, and he was a factor. I mean, he was, like, pretty much their best defenseman as of draft-eligible on the national title freshman as an NCAA freshman. That's, you just don't see that. You don't see that. I think it can't be understated how impressive Ziv Bouyim's season was and how high his ceiling is. He could probably play in the NHL next season. He won't and shouldn't, because I think he still has some development to go, but the guy is that good. He's impressive. Every time I watch him, Pete, I'm just like, you know how sometimes you watch a game and guys stand out for the wrong reasons because you watch mistakes that they make? Yeah, that doesn't happen with Ziv. Like, you just, like, every little play he makes, a little slip pass to a forward, you know, a pass up or a stretch pass, anything, it's not high risk. It's not Zane Parekh high risk, but it's super effective. It's super slick. And he pretty much always makes the right, not just the right play, but the best play. And that's impressive because the quality of competition here is really high in the NCAA. Got thoughts on Ziv?
Yeah. I mean, think of a player that has improved his draft stock more than Ziv Bouyim. I mean, be hard pressed to find any. Right, like Cade Lindstrom's done a pretty good job. Pidgey Ginla's done a pretty good job of that.
Mm-hmm. Michael Hayes.
Yeah, but I don't know. I think Ziv he could be the first defenseman picked. That's not out of the realm of possibilities.
I would not be shocked. I don't think it'll happen, but I would not be shocked.
Right? I mean, I'm not sure if he's playing in the U18s or not for USA. I haven't seen their roster, but it would make sense to add him on the team, and that could help move the needle for his draft stock as well. I think he's definitely locked in as a top 10 prospect. I'm still working on my rankings, Victor, but currently he holds the seventh position, which is possibly going to change. He is a defenseman, though, so he's got that working against him.
We know you hate them.
Allegedly. All right, so the next guy I want to talk about is Macklin Celebrini. You've probably heard of him. Boston University, going to go first in the draft. He just won the Hobie Baker Award as a 17-year-old freshman in the NCAA. Outstanding. He scored 32 goals and 64 points in 38 games. Finished the year on a heater, scoring 21 points in his last 10 games. Only getting shut out once in that stretch, which was in the Frozen Four in a 2-1 loss to Denver, which sent Denver to the finals against BC. He had 8 points in 5 World Junior Championship games as well for Canada as a double underage player there. All the good things have, you know, really been covered here with Celebrini. Everyone knows how good he is. And we know he's good at hockey. We know he'll go first in the draft. But I was kind of curious, Victor, what do we hope that he will be if we have the first overall pick in our fantasy draft? If you got the first pick, you're taking Macklin, right? Shane pointed out on the podcast last episode, who picks him in the NHL draft matters. Some teams develop better, and some teams in the lottery have better supporting casts in place. So I'm really curious to hear what you have to say about this. I'm gonna put you on the spot. I didn't prep you for this, but the lottery teams right now are San Jose is locked in at the number one chances of picking first overall with 18.5%. And the organizational rankings, they ranked sixth overall. They need him the most out of the top five teams in the draft lottery. But he's got the least amount of support if he goes to San Jose. Another option would be the Chicago Blackhawks. They're a 13.5% chance to win the lottery. They were ranked second overall in the Dauber Prospects OR rankings. And that would make a pretty deadly 1-2 punch down the middle to have Bedard and Celebrini, right? The likes of which we've seen before with guys like Lemieux and Jágr and Gretzky-Messier. Hello, that would be amazing. Third option, Anaheim Ducks. They got an 11.5% chance. The OR rankings, they were number one. They have a tremendous supporting cast. And he would be the crown jewel of that rich organization, potentially creating a bit of a dynasty scenario there. And he'd have instant success, I think, in Anaheim. Another option would be the Columbus Blue Jackets. They're 9.5% chance to get the first overall. They rank fifth in the OR rankings. Personally, I think the hockey gods kind of owe it to Columbus here, don't you think? I mean, they have never won a draft lottery. And they don't really have a lot of draft lottery success in their franchise history. So they kind of earned it here, I think. Fans deserve it too. You've already got Adam Fantilli there. That's probably the best comp for Celebrini as well, by the way. And they have a pretty decent supporting cast, so that wouldn't be a bad scenario. And we talked earlier about Montreal. Well, they're the fifth most likely team to win the lottery. They're 8.5%, at least based on the standings when I did this on the weekend. So these might have changed by the time you're listening to this episode. But we work with what we got. They're 8.5%, and they're third overall in the OR rankings, Victor. And it would reunite him with Lane Hudson, and his fantasy value would be limitless for Habs fans in your league. You could trade him for just about anybody. So out of those five teams, I'm really curious to see who you think would be the best fit for Celebrini from a fantasy ownership perspective.
Oh, that's really interesting how you framed it. Well, I think that...
So basically, if you got the first pick in the draft lottery, you know you're going to pick Celebrini, right? Who are you cheering for that he goes to? Right.
Yeah, exactly. Who do you want him to go to? Well, I don't think it's the Blackhawks, because as good as that could be, you already have a first line center, right? I like Columbus. I think Montreal would be really fun, because as good as Nick Suzuki is, I think Celebrini would be a better top line center. So then you have like an amazing 1-2 punch there. I also think the Sharks are interesting. I mean, we talked a lot about Will Smith. I think that would be an amazing 1-2 punch down the middle for sure. In terms of like who might best be served, and it's to round him with the talent, I think is an interesting way to frame it. I think Columbus is really interesting because, you know, they have so many good young players. I think they can come along at the same age. Yeah, I don't know. That's a really hard question in terms of who I want to pick them. I also just feel like I don't want to pick Columbus just because they seem to have struggled to develop and to bring these guys along. So that makes me not like that as much. Whereas the Ducks have done a good job with defensemen. I'm not sure that they've done as good a job with their forwards. So that makes me question that a little bit.
Well, they just added Cutter Gauthier to their roster. Right. And they've got... Mason McTavish. So that would be a pretty formidable trio, all in the same sort of age group. Not to mention Zegras is not too far removed from that bracket as well.
I don't think they need any more centers. This is the other option. And I don't know that I would say Fantilli is the best comp for Celebrini, because I don't know that Fantilli is truly a center in the NHL. I think Celebrini is, for sure. So
you're skirting the issue like a politician here, Victor. Pick a team.
Well, the other thing that's interesting is, I don't know if you saw this or knew this, but the Macklin Celebrini's dad works for the Golden State Warriors, which is the basketball team here. And he was really recently lobbying to have his son with the Sharks. So I think that would be fun. I think in terms of where the teams are, that would be, you know, there would be no pressure on Celebrini to come out to the Sharks. And so I kind of feel like that might be the best. And he has some pretty decent support there. I feel like the Blackhawks, I don't know. I don't want that, just because they got Bedard and they botched that whole sexual assault thing. That really just doesn't sit well with me. I think the most fun option would probably be the Habs, though, because you're right. He would be worth an infinite pot of gold in any fantasy league that has Habs fans. That would be right? That would be hilarious. So I guess I'll say Habs.
Nice. That's a great answer. You know it's going to be the Hawks, though, because they have the winning ticket with Taylor Hall. So it's going to be Chicago. I'd like it to be Columbus, just because I think they maybe deserve it more than anyone else. But if I win the draft lottery and I'm picking first overall, I think I like probably Columbus or Anaheim. I think, you know, you like to see him on a roster that you'll have lots of depth and you'll have an opportunity to play with talented players and not just be the focus of the defensive checking. So another thing on Celebrini I kind of wanted to touch on here real quick, Victor, is I posted a Twitter poll on the weekend. Who is Celebrini closer to, Connor Bedard or Shane Wright? So the point of this was, and I know that, you know, a couple of people pointed out to me that Shane Wright wasn't a first overall pick. I'm well aware I was at the draft. That wasn't where I was going with this. What I want to know is, do people think his upside is closer to an elite superstar like Connor Bedard? Like, is this another generational player, do people think? Just because you're a first overall doesn't mean you're a generational player. So Shane Wright is kind of where I went with that, as just because it's a recent example of someone who everyone thought a lot highly of in his draft year. And 2 years later, we're still waiting for him to arrive, not only as a star in the NHL, but just to arrive in the NHL. And so I could have come up with other options. Like, I could have said Jack Eichel or Adam Fantilli is a comparable, but that doesn't get to the point of what this Twitter poll was. And I was really fascinated by the results too. I thought it would be a lot more disparity between the votes. It got 821 votes, which is a pretty decent amount of votes for a Twitter poll. And it was 57% to 42%. So it was pretty close. I thought it would be a lot higher for Bedard being the comparable. So I thought that was really interesting. I'm curious, Victor, did you vote and which way did you vote? And what did you think of the results of this poll?
Yeah, I voted for Bedard. And I think I responded or quote tweeted your poll because I think that he's much closer to Bedard than he is Wright personally. But I also think that he's different. Like, I think in terms of his style of play is probably closer to Wright, but I think he has more skill. So I think a blend between the two is not unreasonable. I do think that it kind of makes me think of like when people would talk about Jonathan Toews and Patrick Kane. I think that Macklin Celebrini is going to be more like Toews in the sense that he's a guy who's going to be a leader. He's going to be an all situations player and a guy who you can absolutely build a franchise around and win a Stanley Cup. Is he going to be your best fantasy asset? Maybe not. You know, I think that it's really interesting. You mentioned that you would absolutely take Celebrini number one in a fantasy draft. And I don't know. I think there might even be a debate because Ivan Demidov, I think, has 100-point upside. And I don't know that Celebrini, like, I'm sure he could, right? Like, he's that good that he could do that. And, you know, Jonathan Toews certainly had point per game, you know, seasons, but wasn't all the time. And it was kind of took the right situation. But he was so impactful and so good for his NHL team, obviously, right? Three Stanley Cups, like, you know, captain, all that. And I think that's what Macklin is going to be. Like, no doubt, absolute amazing for his team. But maybe he's not the best fantasy contributor, even from this draft. You know, I don't know. I would probably still take him one, but I would think about it. And I think the other thing you have to think about is center versus wing. You know, oftentimes that can be a consideration in your fantasy pool. Oftentimes it's easier to find centers who produce and harder to find wings. So I don't know. There's more variability with the Demidov pick, though, for sure. And we know that Celebrini is going to play like maybe even next season and be instantly pretty good. And that matters, too. So, but I just think it's an interesting conversation. And I do love the poll. And yeah, I think that it was fun. People were definitely trying to say that you didn't know what you were talking about with first picks, but that wasn't the point.
A couple people missed the point, but that's okay. That's all right. And might I suggest, if you do have the first overall pick in your fantasy draft and you're leaning towards Demidov over Macklin Celebrini, I don't think that's an egregious decision, but might I suggest that you trade down? I think you can definitely get Demidov with the second pick and probably get an additional second round pick for going down one spot in the draft and giving up Celebrini to somebody and still getting your guy. That's good asset management.
If someone will oblige you, I agree. All right, we good on Celebrini?
Moving on.
All right, last guy Maybe a little anticlimactic. Maybe we should have finished with Celebrini. But Sean Behrens is the last guy I want to talk about. And he is Denver Pioneers defenseman. And he's a Colorado Avalanche, which is fun. Played college there. And he's hopefully potentially playing for the NHL team there. He's 21 now, and he just turned 21. He was a second round pick back in 2021. When he was drafted, he's definitely an undersized mobile defenseman. He grew an inch, so he's 5'10", 176, still a bit undersized, but man, is he good. And the undersized part does not stop him from throwing the body. He was in the 90th percentile for hits per game, per 60 in the NCAA. He threw the body around. He separated guys from pucks. He was physical. It was actually kind of funny. I think JD Burke actually at one point mentioned that Sean Behrens being the enforcer for the Denver Pioneers is not something he had on his bingo card, but it was true. He was being that physical guy. It was actually kind of strange to see. His hockey prospecting has Behrens at he's been hovering at a high teens, low 20% chance of being a star this whole time. 31 points in 44 games is pretty solid production. He's basically had really strong production his entire NCAA career. So the guy's a gamer. You know, the Avs don't have the best prospect pool because they're a great team. And I was just thinking of, like, what other undersized defenseman does he remind me of? Because I don't think he's Torrey Krug. Like, he's not that level of offense. But Jacob Bryson is someone who plays in the NHL who's a little bit undersized, who's, you know, I think pretty mobile and quite good. I think Behrens is a little, you know, better than that. But that's maybe someone to think of as proof of concept that he can hang. His PNH really has him at a 70-point player, which is pretty good. And we were talking about the all-tournament team. I think it's just worth mentioning, because I don't know if we mentioned all the names, but Matt Davis was the most outstanding player, because he was, and goalie's an important position. Ziv Bouillon was there. Tristan Broz, who scored the golden goal for them against, who was that against that they beat in the semifinal? He scored the golden goal. And Rieger Lorenz. All of those are from Denver, including Sean Behrens. So Sean Behrens and Ziv Bouillon were the two all-tournament defensemen. That's pretty impressive. There were some really good defensemen in this tournament, including some on the BC side and, you know, obviously BU and Michigan State, Artem Lishunov. So there were some really strong defensemen, and he was one of them. So the reason I pointed out is because I think the fact that the Avalanche were able to trade away Bowen Byram and get Casey Mittelstadt, I think part of that was them knowing they have a really strong replacement. And they don't necessarily need a replacement because they have Girard and they have Taves and they have Makar and they have some good players there. But I think Behrens can slide into that, you know, second pairing, second, third pairing. He's not, maybe not going to get all the offensive minutes, but, you know, he could replace Girard at some point in that role. So more of a depth option, but I think Sean Behrens is underrated and how good he is, and he's a really solid defender. Don't be mistaken by his size of the fact that he can't play against bigger, stronger competition, because he absolutely can, and he can thrive. And two-time national champ Sean Behrens, there you go. Any thoughts on him, Pete?
Yeah, you made my point for me there, where I think his play allowed Colorado comfortable trading Bowen Byram to Buffalo for Mittelstadt there. The organizational rankings was a little bit shy on him. He was about a 6.5 overall. A lot of people scoring him a 6. The high water mark was an 8 from Dauber, and I think a 4 or 5 from Mark was the low score for him there. But you and I both agreed, and we had him at a 6. Would you change that score now after watching him in the Frozen Four here, Victor? Would you bump that up a touch?
No, I think he's somewhere between a 6 and a 7. And, yeah, you know, I think he's going to play, but I don't think he's a top pairing guy. And I think on another team, he could run a power play, maybe even the top power play, but that's not happening in Colorado. He's probably not even getting second power play time, but he's a really good mobile defenseman. I mean, I think just think what Sam Girard is, and he could be that, or maybe even a little better. And if that's useful in your league, then hey, then it's worth it. And there's certainly leagues I'm in that's worth it. And there are some that are more shallow where I wouldn't touch Sean Behrens.
Yeah, I'm a little gun shy about the height at 5'9". He's 21 years old already, so he's probably not going to reach the 6-foot territory at all there.
How dare you? He's 5'10". How dare you?
If you say so. With skates on, I suppose he would be. Yeah.
Elite prospects says 5'10". I know he was drafted at 5'9", but
I'm looking at his hockey prospecting card and it's 5'9", 174. So it depends who you ask and who's doing the measuring, I suppose. But yeah, however you want to say it, he's on the smaller size, and that's not the flavor of the month in the NHL right now. The NHL likes the bigger mobile defenseman. So does have that working against him. You can always make an exception for one, maybe two of those guys on your roster. And Colorado's already got Sam Girard there, who's on the small side. And Cale Makar is not a giant either. So you might be a little cautious about having too many sub-6-foot defensemen on one NHL roster. Depending on who you ask. I mean, I'm not making NHL rosters, but that seems to be a trend these days. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, definitely. Although there is definitely more of a place for those smaller defensemen in the league, but you can't have all of that.
Right.
not even more than half of that. It's got to, like, there's
one or two.
There's certainly a cap on that for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, before that's all the guys that we were going to talk about. Before we sign out, I wanted to give a shout out to the winners of our listener league, because we started our new dynasty leagues this year, and we had one for me, one for Pete, one for Evan, and we had some winners. So in Evan's
league, there is much rejoicing.
In Evan's league, Man in the Miro, which is just a fantastic team name for Miro Heiskanen, who I believe this GM is Finnish. I think his name is Paavo. If I looked it up, I'm sorry if I said that wrong. He took it down. That was a great tournament. Him and Pasta La Vista went at it. So congratulations to Man in the Miro. That was in Evan's league. In Pete's league, we had the Hamilton Tigers, who finished third, but took down the Minnesota North Stars in the championship. That's Jay Roma. And he's so great job on that championship. And in my league, I went wire to wire and won first overall seed. And I have to thank Clay, who helped me. He was my co-GM. Always good to bounce ideas off people. So Wayne's World came in second, put up a good fight, had us scared for a minute there, but we were able to take it down. So congrats to all the champs, and we're looking forward to continuing on doing the draft and, you know, doing the whole dynasty thing. So thanks for coming along for the first season, and more to come.
Right on. Well, that's it for report number 53. Thank you everyone for listening to the show. Feedback, we'd love to hear it. Reach out to us on Twitter or X, DPR_show. Victor is at VictorNuno12, and I'm at Farling. And our producer, Evan, is at Sabrin91. Don't forget, follow HockeyPod.net. Lots of cool shows there. And subscribe wherever you're listening to help promote the show. Share us on iTunes. Share the links. Give us a 5-star review. We'd love it. That's it for this week. We'll talk to you next week. In the meantime, keep your stick on the ice.
Picked the wrong week. Quit sniffing glue.
Let's do that hockey.